Daryl Lynn, of course, threw a fit, and when Ma asked me if I'd done it, I said, no. I could feel my cheeks and neck burning red. You sure, Marty? She asked. I'd only nodded and left the room. It was one of the worst days of my life. About an hour later, she come out on the porch where I was pushing myself slow in the swing and sat down beside me. You know, Marty, she said, Daryl Lynn don't know who ate the ear off her candy rabbit, and I don't know who did it, but Jesus knows. And right this very minute, Jesus is looking down with the saddest eyes on the person who ate that chocolate. The Bible says that the worst thing that can ever possibly happen to us is to be separated forever from God's love. I hope you'll keep that in mind. I just swallowed and didn't say anything. But before I went to bed, when Ma asked me again about that rabbit, I gulped and said yes, and she made me get down on my knees and ask God's forgiveness, which wasn't so bad. I honestly felt better afterward. But then she said that Jesus wanted me to go in the next room and tell Daryl Lynn what I'd done. And Daryl Lynn had a fit all over again. Threw a box of Crayolas at me and could have broke my nose. Called me a rotten, greedy pig. If that made Jesus sad, Ma never said. Now, as I study the darkness in the room around me, I'm thinking about lies again. I hadn't lied to Judd Travers when I said I hadn't seen his dog in the yard today. That was the honest-to-God truth, because Shiloh hadn't been anywhere near our yard. But I also know that you can lie not only by what you say, but what you don't say. Nothing I'd told Judd was an outright lie, but what I'd kept inside myself made him think that I hadn't seen his dog at all. Jesus, I whisper finally, what you want me to do? Be 100% honest and carry that dog back to Judd so that one of your creatures can be kicked and starved all over again? Or keep him here and fatten him up to glorify your creation? The question seemed to answer itself. And I'm pretty proud of that prayer. Repeat it to myself so as to remember it in case I need to use it again. If Jesus is anything like the story cards from Sunday school make him out to be, he ain't the kind to want a thin little beagle to be hurt. The problem's more mixed up than that, though. I'm lying to my folks as well. I'm not eating the leftover meatloaf I've put away. Every bit of food saved is money saved that could go to buy Daryl Lynn a new pair of sneakers so Ma won't have to cut open the tops of her old ones to give her toes more room. Every little bit of food wasted is money wasted. If we ever have the least little bit of money to spare that doesn't have to go for the care of Grandma Preston, first thing we all want is a telephone, so we don't have to ride down to Doc Murphy's to use his. But the way I figure, if it's food from my own plate, I would have eaten myself, but don't. What's the harm in that? Next morning, when I get up to see Shiloh, I put the rope on his collar and lead him to the other side of the hill again, out of sight of all but God. Then I let him go, and we race and tumble and laugh and roll, stopping now and then just to lie in the clover, me on my back, Shiloh on his stomach, both of us panting and nuzzling each other. I don't know if Shiloh's getting more human or I'm getting to be more dog. If Jesus ever comes back to earth again, I'm thinking he'll come as a dog, because there isn't anything as humble or patient or loving or loyal as the dog I have in my arms right now. We eat our Sunday meal, but by late afternoon, storm clouds roll in, and the rain beats down on the tin roof of our house, streaming down the window glass, making a small pond in the side yard. I can't help staring out the window at the far hill. Will Shiloh, can he even, leap that fence to try and go somewhere it's more dry? Is he smart enough to go under that lean-to I'd made for him? Have I built it right, away from the wind? What if he gets to howling? In 20 minutes, the rain stops, though. The sun comes out, the birds start to sing again. All those worms oozing up through the wet mud. Shiloh stayed where he was, trusting me that where I put him was best. Being quiet, like he knows his life depends on it. "Marty," Dad says, going outside with a rag to wipe off his Jeep.
I saw Mrs. Howard yesterday. She said David was back from Tennessee, wanting to know when you boys could get together. She said David would like to come up here someday next week.
I like David Howard fine, but I sure don't want him up here. David likes the hill, always wants to play there. He's not afraid of snakes the way Daryl Lynn is. David, in fact, likes to go to the very top of that hill and then go run and lickety-split down it, racing to see who's first to the fence at the bottom. Likes to climb the trees up there, too, and play lookout. Well, I'll go down to David's tomorrow, I say. I'd rather do that. Why not do both? Ma says, coming out to throw some mash to the hens. You've hardly seen any friends all summer, Marty. Why don't you go down to Friendly one afternoon and ask David to come up here another? There's nothing much to do up here, I say, not knowing how else to answer. It was the wrong answer. Both Ma and Dad were looking at me now.
Well, you said just the other day you had plenty to do here,
Dad tells me, wringing out his rag at the pump. Lots for me to do, but, not much for David Howard, I say. A lie. That's a flat-out lie. Funny how one lie leads to another, and before you know it, your whole life can be a lie. I sit on the porch swing later, not even bothering to push it, and listen to the table being set inside.
What you figure is wrong with that boy, Lou?
Dad's voice.
Oh, just being 11, I guess, Ma tells him. 11's a moody age. Was for me, anyways.
You think that's all it is?
What pleases you one day don't please you at all the next. What more do you think it is?
Don't think he's got that dog on his mind still, do you?
11's got about everything on its mind, Ma answers. And then the evening news comes on, and Daryl Lynn and Becky come out to the porch, leaving the TV to Daddy. Daryl Lynn's got the devil in her tonight. Little bit bored with summer, but not quite ready for school to start. Just for devilment, she plunks herself down beside me in that swing and starts doing everything I do. I sigh, she sighs. I rest my arms on my head, she does the same. Gets Becky doing it, too, both of them laughing to beat the band. When I have my fill of this nonsense, I decide to go up the hill and see how Shiloh's doing. But as I go down off the porch, Daryl Lynn gets up and makes as if to follow me. I stop.
I'm looking to find me a snake stick, I say as if to myself. I'm looking to find me a snake stick, Daryl Lynn says.
I don't pay her no mind at all. Just start walking along the edge of the yard, picking up a stick here, a stick there. Daryl Lynn tagging along behind.
It's got to have the longest handle and a good strong fork on the end, I say, because that was the biggest, meanest snake I ever saw in my life.
Daryl Lynn stops dead still. She couldn't say all that right if she tried, but she's not interested anymore in trying.
What snake? She says. Snake I saw up on the hill this morning, I tell her. Must have been 4 or 5 feet long. Just looking for somebody's leg to wrap itself around.
Daryl Lynn don't go a step farther. Becky don't even come down off the porch.
What are you going to do when you find it? Daryl Lynn asks.
Try to keep it from biting me first. Pick it up with my stick second. Put it in a sack and carry it clear on up past the Shiloh schoolhouse. Let it out in the woods there. Won't kill it unless I have to.
Kill it, says Daryl Lynn. Get your gun and blow its head off.
You've been watching too much stuff on TV, Daryl Lynn, I tell her. Even snakes got the right to live.
I'm thinking how if I ever become a vet's helper, I got to take care of pet snakes, too. Next day, to head off David Howard from riding up from Friendly on his bike, I go down to see him. I tended to Shiloh first, taking a fistful of scrambled eggs left over from breakfast, a bit of bacon, and a half slice of whole wheat toast that I stuck in my jeans pocket. It's not enough for the dog, I know, but probably more than he'd get from Judd. It's not enough for me, either. Sneaking off half my breakfast, lunch, and dinner for Shiloh like I'm doing means me going half-hungry all the time. But if I eat extra, then it means Shiloh's costing us money we can't afford. I fill my pockets with wormy peaches before I set out for Friendly, biting off each piece, spitting it out in my hand, and picking out the worms before I put it back in my mouth. It pleased me that Shiloh was sleeping in his lean-to when I'd gone up that morning. The ground was dry under there, and I'd brought up some old gunny sacks from the shed for him to lie on. Made it seem more like a bed to him, more like a home. The walk to Friendly takes a good long time unless I hitch a ride. I'm not allowed to get in a car with somebody I don't know. But Dad being the mail carrier for this part of the county, I know most everybody who goes by. The first person to come along this day, though, is Judd Travers. When I hear the sound of a motor and turn to see his truck slowing down, I turn forward again and keep on walking. But he pulls up beside me.
"Want a lift?"
he sings out.
"No, thanks," I say. "Almost there." "Where are you going?"
I couldn't think fast enough to lie. "David Howard's."
"Hell, boy, you ain't even halfway. Hop in."
I know I don't have to unless I want, but if he's already suspicious about me, that'll only make it worse. So I get in.
"See my dog yet?"
First thing out of his mouth. "I've been looking over all the roads," I tell him in answer. "No beagle."
"Well, I don't think he'd stick to roads," Judd says. "Not a dog as shy as him. Shy as a field mouse, except when he's around rabbits. That's what the man said who sold him to me, and he sure was right about that."
"How much did you pay for him?" I ask.
"Got him cheap, 'cause he's shy. $35. Worth a lot more than that as a hunting dog if I could just keep that damned animal home."
"You gotta treat a dog good if you want him to stick around," I say, bold as brass.
"What you know about it?"
Judd jerks his head in my direction, then turns the other way and spits his tobacco out the window.
"You never even had a dog, did you?"
"I figure a dog's the same as a kid. You don't treat a kid right, he'll run off first chance he gets too." Judd laughs.
"Well, if that was true, I would have run away when I was 4. Far back as I can remember, Pa took the belt to me. Big old welts on my back so raw I could hardly pull my shirt on. I stuck around. Didn't have any place else to go. I turned out, didn't I?"
"Turned out how?" The boldness in my chest is growing, taking up all the air. Now Judd sounds mad.
"You trying to be smart with me, boy?"
"No, just asking how you turned out. I'm somebody who was beat since he was 4. I feel sorry is what I feel." Judd's real quiet a moment. The big old wad of tobacco in his cheek bobs up and down.
"Well, don't go wasting your sorry on me," he says. "Nobody ever felt sorry for me, and I never felt sorry for nobody else. Sorry's something I can do without."
I don't say anything at all. We reach the road where David Howard lives, and the truck slows down. "I can walk from here," I tell him. "Thanks," I get out. But as I come around the truck to cross the street, Judd leans out the window.
"Like I said, that dog's a shy one. Don't think you'll see much of him near the road, but you keep your eye out for him in the fields. That's where he'll be, more than likely. You see him, all you gotta do is whistle. That's what I teach him. I whistle and he comes to me. He gets fed. But he does something I don't like. I kick him clear to China. You see him just whistle, then hang on to him and I'll come pick him up. You hear?"
"I hear," I tell him, and keep walking. David Howard's house is about twice as big as ours, for about half as many people. Only him and his ma and dad. Mr. Howard works for the Tyler Star News in Sistersville, and David's ma is a teacher. They're always glad to have me come down to visit, partly because David and I are best friends, and partly, I think, because their old house is so big, the three of them get lost in it. It's got 2 floors. 3, counting the basement, and 4, counting the attic. Has 4 bedrooms upstairs. 1 for David, 1 for his folks, 1 just for company, and 1 for his father's books with a computer in it. Downstairs is a big kitchen, a dining room with a fancy light hanging over the table, a parlor, and a side room with lots of windows just for plants, plus a porch that runs along 3 sides of the house. I told Ma once the Howards had a room just for company, a room just for books, and a room just for plants. And she said that was 3 rooms too many. It's the first time I ever saw any envy in my ma. David says the house used to belong to his great-granddaddy, so I figure it'll get to be David someday. Like maybe our little house and the hill and meadow and the far woods will belong to me and Shiloh. Except I'd probably have to share it with Daryl Lynn and Becky and whoever they marry, and that's a whole lot of people for 4 rooms.
"Marty,"
Mrs. Howard says when I ring their doorbell that sounds like church chimes. "We're so glad to see you. Come on in." She always means it, too. It's as though she thinks about me even when I'm not there. Then David comes whooping downstairs. He's carrying the helicopter that flies when you pull a string. And pretty soon we're out in the backyard, chasing around after the helicopter and telling each other what we've been doing the 6 weeks since school let out. I got to bite my tongue not to let on about Shiloh. We sit on David's back steps and eat popsicles as Ma makes out of pineapple juice. I tell David about the fox I saw with a gray body and a red head, and he tells me about his Aunt Siamese cat that yowls just for the pure joy of making noise. Then I tell him about Judd Travers and how mean he is to his dogs, not mentioning Shiloh, of course. And then David says he's got this surprise to show me. We go upstairs to his room, and David says he got a pet and asks, do I want to hold it? Sure, I tell him. What is it? Sit down and close your eyes and hold out your hands, says David. I sit down on the edge of his bed and close my eyes and hold out my hands. I expect something warm and wiggly and furry to plop into my arms. Instead, I feel something cold and round and plastic, and when I look, it's a fishbowl with sand in it and a hermit crab scurrying around with a shell on its back. This is a pet? My first pet, David says. His name is Hermie. See all those shells in there? We bought them for him. At night, he gets out of one and puts on another, just like changing clothes. I look at David, and I look at that crab in a fishbowl, and I want to tell him about Shiloh and how we run up and down the far side of the hill every day and roll in the grass and how he licks my face. But I can't tell him anything. Not yet. Not ever, maybe. Hermie's sort of fun, though. We get out David's old blocks, the kind you play with back in kindergarten, and we build this big maze with walls on both sides, and then we put Hermie in it. He skids along the maze, looking which way to go, and we laugh when he gets himself in a dead end. I guess any kind of pet's okay once you get used to it. But I wouldn't trade Shiloh for all the hermit crabs in the world. When can I come up to your house? David asks me when we put the blocks away. I don't know, I tell him. Ma's had this sort of headache lately, and she can't take any noise at all. Boy, I am sure asking for trouble with that one. We could stay out on that big hill, David suggests. Chase around in that field, play lookout. Don't think we ought to till she's feeling better, I say. I'll let you know. But I can come down here again next week, maybe. I tell Mrs. Howard I got to be home by late afternoon to help out. And she says surely I can stay for lunch, which is what I was hoping. I sit down at the table with placemats, which are little doll-sized tablecloths, one under each plate. Mrs. Howard's made us each a chicken salad sandwich with lettuce and tomato and toothpicks with olives on top to hold it all together. David's ma's like that. I think it's because she's a teacher, always looking for ways to make something better than it is. She does the same with boys. She don't just leave us to eat by ourselves. My ma packs us a lunch and lets us eat it out in the woods. Mrs. Howard always sits down to eat with us and talks about grown-up things. Today she tells us about how we've got some new people elected to office who are going to be more honest, she hopes, than the people they defeated, and how the county's going to be better because of it, and so will the whole state of West Virginia. David's ma thinks big. You can't just go on electing people to government because they were friends of your father or grandfather, she says, chewing on a bite of celery. Mostly I'm thinking about the food. I eat every bit of my chicken sandwich. I'm so hungry I don't even save some for Shiloh. Then I'm ashamed of myself. Mrs. Howard notices the way I pick up every little crumb, and she says, I've got enough chicken salad left for another half a sandwich, Marty. Would you like it? Sure would taste good on the walk back home, I tell her. And she sets right to work, wrapping it up for me. Shiloh's dinner, I tell myself. But lunch isn't over yet. After the sandwich, there's tapioca pudding and chocolate-covered graham crackers, which I love almost as much as Christmas. I don't see any way to get the pudding to Shiloh, so I eat that. But I ask, can I take a couple of cookies along to eat on the way home, too? And she opens the sack and sticks in 6 cookies. Ma would have blushed with shame if she heard me ask this. But seems I'm at the point where I'll do most anything for Shiloh. A lie don't seem a lie anymore when it's meant to save a dog. And right and wrong's all mixed up in my head. Worse than that, when I leave David's house, I don't even head home. First I go down the street to the corner store and ask Mr. Wallace, does he have any sort of old cheese or lunch meat he can sell me cheap? I got 53 cents for the cans I collected so far that Dad turned in for me, and I show Mr. Wallace how much I got.
Well, Marty, let me see what I can find back here,
he says, leading me into the little room behind the counter. He's sort of talking without looking at me, the way folks do when they don't want to embarrass you.
I got some stuff here that's not exactly spoiled, but it's too old to sell. Wouldn't want your family getting sick on it, though.
I blush then, because my dad would die of embarrassment if he knew what Mr. Wallace is thinking, that I'm buying this food for our supper. But there's no way in the world I can let on about Shiloh. I give him all the change I got, and he lets me have a big hunk of cheese, moldy on one side, a carton of sour cream, and half a package of Frankfurters that somebody opened and bought five of. I'm happy as a flea on a dog. Somehow I know without asking that Mr. Wallace isn't going to go telling folks about it, because people around here tend to keep quiet out of someone else's business. Next problem I gotta solve, though, is how to keep all this stuff from spoiling in the July heat. Can't keep it in our refrigerator or Ma would notice right off. When I get home, Ma's ironing and watching TV, and Daryl Lynn and Becky's out on the front swing with paper dolls spread out all over the place. So I fish around out in the shed till I find me an old high C can. I sneak off up the hill with the can and all the food I got with me. Then, with Shiloh watching, I put a rock in the bottom of the can to hold it down, set it in the cool stream, surround it with rocks, and put the container of sour cream, the Frankfurters, and the cheese and cookies in there. Put the plastic lid on, and set a large rock on top to keep the raccoons out. I'm so proud of myself, I like to crow. Hungry again, too. But that half-chicken salad sandwich from Mrs. Howard is Shiloh's dinner, and I give it to him right off. After that, Shiloh and me go on a good long run over the meadow on the far side of the hill. And after I take him back, put fresh water in the pie pan, and love him good, I start down the hill. Halfway to the bottom, here comes Daryl Lynn. What you doing up here? I ask her, heart starting to thump. Just wanted to see what you're doing, she complains. You go off up here every day almost. You leave Becky by herself while Ma's ironing? Becky's okay. She turns and follows me back down the hill. Shiloh, up in the pen, don't make a sound. That's how smart a dog he is. Well, I was looking for that snake again, but he's hiding from me good, I tell her. You still didn't get him? She asks, and when I look back, she's got her eyes to the left, then to the right. You didn't even take your snake stick, she says. She's a smart one, too. Got me a stick back up on the hill, I tell her. How many snakes you figure up there, Marty? Oh, about 29 that you can see. Baby snakes all over the place, though, hiding, growing into big ones all the time. Daryl Lynn's walking faster now, hurrying to get on by me, watching every place she sets her foot. I don't feel good about the lies I tell Daryl Lynn or David or his ma, but don't feel exactly bad, neither. If what Grandma Preston told me once about heaven and hell is true, and liars go to hell, then I guess that's where I'm headed. But she also told me that only people are allowed in heaven, not animals. And if I was to go to heaven and look down to see Shiloh left below, head on his paws, I'd run away from heaven, sure. Next 2 days go by smooth as buttermilk. Shiloh gets biscuits or toast and a couple of bites of ham for breakfast, and then in the evening, I fix him up some Frankfurters, cut up and mixed with sour cream, and little chunks of cheese. He don't much like the cheese. It sticks to his teeth, and he turns his head sideways when he chews, trying to get it off. Licks his chops afterward, though. He throws up the first time he eats his stuff. Too rich for his belly, I guess. But after that, he manages to keep it down, and all the while, he's fattening out a little. Each day, it's harder to see his ribs. I know my secret can't go on forever, though. Only had the dog for 6 days, And that evening, I find out that Judd Travers wants to hunt on our land. Up the hill and over in the far woods. Thinks maybe he could find himself some quail over there, he says. When Dad tells us that piece of news at dinner, my whole body goes cold. I want to jump up and scream, "No!" But I just grip my chair and wait it out. "Ray, I don't like that idea at all," Ma says. "You never asked to hunt on his land, and I don't want him hunting on ours. If we let him, we've got to let anyone else who asks. And one of those shots could find its way down here."
"I'll tell him no," Dad says. "I don't like the idea of it myself. I'll tell him the kids play up there."
I stop gripping the chair, but my heart still goes on thumping hard. I'm thinking how maybe Judd Travers has hold of the idea that I got his dog hid up there, and he's looking for an excuse to snoop around. Having Shiloh a secret is like a bomb waiting to go off. Next day, Dad comes home with more news. Good news to him. Bad news to me.
"Can't figure it out," he says, walking through the door with a sack in his hands. "Folks are taking to leaving me food in their mailboxes, Lou. Used to be it was just Mrs. Ellison and her banana bread, but found me a ham sandwich today in Nora Klingel's box and half a baked pie in the Saunders. I look thin to you or something?"
Ma laughs. "Maybe it's just you're the best mail carrier they ever had on the route."
"Well, we got half a pie for dessert tonight anyways," Dad says.
"Oh, brother," I say to myself. "Maybe Mr. Wallace is doing more talking than I figured. He wouldn't come right out and tell folks I was in his store buying cheap food, but he might just pass it along that the Preston family's in hard times, and suddenly food starts appearing. That's the way it is here." The next day, Ma rides into town with Dad, taking the girls along, and goes shopping for new sneakers for Daryl Lynn and socks and underpants for Becky. First time I have the whole place to myself, and I let Shiloh run pure free. Bring him down the hill to the house, feed him the heels off a loaf of new bread, all the leftover sausage from breakfast, and a bowl of milk. Then I let him lick the oatmeal pan. Show him every one of our four rooms. Hold him in my lap on the porch swing and laugh when he tries to stand up on the seat himself while the swing's moving. I let him smell the couch where I sleep and crawl under the front steps to sniff out the mole lives under there. Follow him all over creation when he takes out after a rabbit. Then he gives up when he sees I'm not going to shoot that rabbit. No way. But I figure my luck's going to run out if I don't get him back to his pen soon. So about noon, I take him back. And he goes right to the gunny sacks in the lean-to. He's so tuckered out. It's just in time, because when I get back and get the dishes done for Ma, the house picked up some, I look out and here she comes up the lane with Daryl Lynn and Becky and their packages. Somebody gave them a lift. You can always count on that around Friendly. Ma's pleased I got the dishes done, I can tell. "It's nice to come back to a clean house, Marty," she tells me. "Had good luck with my shopping, too. Wasn't a thing I bought that wasn't on sale." Daryl Lynn's wore her new sneakers home and got a blister already. But she don't care. She's so glad to have something new. When I walk in the kitchen next, Ma's looking at her face in the mirror over the sink. Got her eyebrows raised high. Then she pushes them low, then raises them again. When she sees me studying her, she says, "Marty, I got frown lines on my face. Tell me the truth now." I look at her good. "Sure don't see any," I say. "I don't neither. Ma's got a pretty face. Plain but smooth." "Well, I don't either, but two people this morning asked me how I was feeling, and one of them wants to tell me what to take for headaches. I figure that if folks think I have headaches, I must be doing a lot of frowning." Womp, 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 that's my heart. "Folks think they got a remedy for something, they'll tell it to you whether you need it or not," I say. Sound so grown up, I hardly recognize myself. So scared inside, though, my stomach's shaking. Ma's taking out all the things she's bought and putting them on the table, taking the price tags off Becky's underpants and socks. "I saw David's mother at the dollar store," she says, "and they've got relatives coming in tonight. She wanted to know if she could bring David up here tomorrow when the rest of them go to Parkersburg. I told her yes." "Okay," I say, but all the while I'm thinking what I'm going to do with David to keep him off that hill. Take him up toward the old Shiloh schoolhouse, maybe? Walk along the river? Funny thing is, you've got yourself a dog, you sometimes feel like you don't need anyone else. Used to be, I'd be waiting at the window for David Howard to come up here for a visit. Nobody else loves you as much as a dog. Except your Ma, maybe. That night, Ma makes us fried chicken for supper. First time in a long while. I put away a wing and a thigh on a saucer to eat later, I tell Ma, and add a spoonful of squash, which might be good for Shiloh's insides. He eats anything. The frankfurters and cheese and sour cream is all gone. So I gotta be watching for table scraps again and go out can collecting soon. Dad's working on the pickup after dinner, changing the oil. Becky and Daryl Ann's turning somersaults in the grass, and Ma's cleaning the kitchen. Soon as her back is turned, I sneak the food off the saucer and head up the hill to see Shiloh. I can tell Shiloh likes the fried chicken better than he liked the sour cream frankfurter mess he'd been eating all week. Even eats the squash, and then he licks my hands and fingers to get all the salt off any place I'd touched a piece of chicken. Since I'd already taken him all over creation that morning, I don't feel he'll miss much if I don't take him out again. So I go around scooping up all the dog do like I do every day, toss it over the fence, and then I lie down on my back in the grass and cover my face with my arms, our favorite game. Shiloh goes nuts trying to uncover my face, nudging at my arms with his nose, tail going 90 miles an hour. Never whines like some dogs do, though. Even when we're out in the far meadow, racing the wind, he'll start to bark, and I'll say, "Shh, Shiloh," and he stops right off. Wish I could let him make a little noise. It's not natural, I know, to keep an animal so quiet. But he's happy quiet, not scared quiet. I know that much. I move my arms off my face after a while and let him rest his paws on my chest. And I'm lying there petting his head. He's got this happy dog smile on his face. The breeze is blowing cool air in from the west. And I figure I'm about as happy right then as you can get in your whole life. And then I hear someone say, "Marty." I look up, and there's Ma. I can't move. Seems as if the sky is swirling around above me, tree branches going every which way. Ma's face even looks different from down on the ground. Shiloh, of course, goes right over, tail wagging, but all the steam's gone out of me. "How long have you had this dog up here?" she asks, not one trace of a smile on her face. I sit up real slow and swallow. "About a week, I guess." "You've had Judd's dog up here a week, and you told him you didn't know where it was?" "Didn't say I didn't know. He asked had I seen him, and I said I hadn't seen him in our yard. That much was true." Ma comes around to the trunk of the pine tree, unfastens the wire that holds the fencing closed, and lets herself in. She crouches down on the soft pine needles, and Shiloh starts leaping up on her with his front paws, licking at her face. I can't tell at first how she feels about him, the way she leans back, away from his dripping tongue. And then I see her hand reach out, with its short, smooth fingers, and stroke him. "So we've got ourselves a secret," she says at last. And when I hear her say "we," I feel some better. Not a lot, but some. "How you come to follow me up here tonight? I want to know." Now I can tell for sure her eyes are smiling, but her lips are still set. "Well, I had my suspicions before, but it was the squash that did it." "The squash? Marty, I never knew you to eat more than a couple of bites of squash in your life. And when you put away a spoonful of that to eat later, I knew for sure it wasn't you doing the eating. Then the way you've been sneaking off every night." She stops stroking Shiloh and turns on me. "I wish you'd told me. Figured you'd make me give him back. This dog don't belong to you. Mine more than Judd's," I say hotly. "He only paid money for him. I'm the one who loves him. That doesn't make him yours. Not in the eyes of the law, it doesn't. Well, what kind of law is it, Ma, that lets a man mistreat his dog?" Ma just sighs then and starts stroking Shiloh's head. Shiloh wiggles a few inches closer to her on his belly, rests his nose against her thigh, tail going wick-whack, wick-whack. Finally, Ma says, "Your dad don't know about him?" I shake my head. More silence. Then she says, "I never kept a secret from your dad in the 14 years we've been married." "You ain't gonna tell him?" Marty, I've got to. He ever finds out about this dog and knows I knew but didn't tell him, how could he trust me? If I keep this one secret from him, he'll think maybe there are more. He'll make me give him back to Judd, Ma. I could hear my voice shaking now. You know he will. What else can we do? I can feel hot tears in my eyes now and try to keep them from spilling out. I turn my head till they go away. Judd Travers ever comes here to get his dog, he'll have to fight me to get it. Marty, listen, Ma, just for one night, promise you won't tell Dad so I can figure out something. Can tell she's thinking on it. You aren't fixing to run off with this dog, are you, Marty? Don't you ever run away from a problem. I don't answer, because that very thing crossed my mind. I can't promise not to tell your dad tonight if you can't promise not to run off. I won't run off, I say. Then I won't tell him tonight. Or in the morning neither, I add. I've got to have at least one day to think. I don't know what good it will do, though. I've already thought till my brains are dry. Ma puts out both hands now and scratches behind Shiloh's ears, and he licks her all up and down her arms. His name's Shiloh, I tell her, pleased. After a while, Ma gets up. You coming back to the house now? In a bit, I answer. It's hard to say how I feel after she leaves. Glad, in a way, that somebody knows, that I don't have to carry this whole secret on my head alone. But more scared than glad. Have me just one day to think of what to do and not any closer to an answer than I'd been before. I've spent all my canned money on stuff to feed Shiloh. Only money I have now to my name is a nickel I'd found out by the road. Judd won't sell me Shiloh's spit for a nickel. My first thought is to give him to somebody else and not tell them whose dog it is, then tell Ma that Shiloh would run off. But that would be two more lies to add to the pack. Word would get out somehow or other, and Judd would see David Howard or Mike Wells walking his dog, and then the war would really start. All I can think of is to take Shiloh down to Friendly the next day, draw me up a big sign that says, Free, World's Best Dog, or something, and hold it up along the road to Sistersville, hoping that some stranger driving along will get a warm spot in his heart for Shiloh, stop his car, and take him home. And I won't ask him where home is, neither, so when Ma asks me where the dog is, I can tell her honest, I don't know. When I get back to the house, Dad's just washing up at the pump, using grease to get the oil off his arms. He's yelling at Daryl Lynn and Becky, who are playing in the doorway, screen wide open, letting in the moths. I go inside, and Ma's putting the dishes away in the kitchen, lifting them out of the drain rack and stacking the plates on the shelf. She's got the radio on and is humming along with a country music song. It's you I want to come home to. It's you to bake my bread. It's you to light my fire. It's you to share my bed. She sort of blushes when she sees me there by the refrigerator, listening to her sing. I know I'm not going to sleep much that night. I sit on the couch staring at the TV, but not really watching, while Ma gives Becky her bath. Then I wait till Daryl Lynn is out of the bathroom so I can take my own bath. Don't know if I soaped up or not. Don't even know if I washed my feet. I go back in the living room, and Ma has my bed made up there on the sofa. The house gets dark. The doors close. And then just the night sounds come from outside. I know there's a piece of cardboard somewhere out in the shed I can print on. There won't be any trouble getting Shiloh to Friendly, either. I'll put that rope on his collar, and he'll follow along good as anything. We won't take the main road, though, in case Judd's out in his truck. Take every back road I can find. Then I'll plant myself on the road to Sistersville, holding that sign, Shiloh waiting beside me, wondering what it is we're going to do next. What am I fixing to do, anyway? Give him to the first car that stops? Don't even know the person driving. Might even be I'll give Shiloh to somebody who'll treat him worse than Judd Travers. Now that Shiloh's come to trust me, here I am getting ready to send him off again. I feel like there's a tank truck sitting on my chest. Can't hardly breathe. Got one day to decide what to do with Shiloh, and nothing I think on seems right. I hear Shiloh making a noise up on the far hill in his pen. Not now, Shiloh, I whisper. You've been good as gold all this time. Don't start now. Can it be he knows what I'm fixing to do? Then I hear a yelp. A loud yelp, then a snarl and a growl, and suddenly the air is filled with yelps, and it's the worst kind of noise you can think of. A dog being hurt. I leap out of bed, thrust my feet in my sneakers, and with shoelaces flying, I'm racing through the kitchen toward the back door. A light comes on. I can hear Dad's voice saying, "Get a flashlight," but I'm already out on the back porch then, running up the hill. There are footsteps behind me. Dad's gaining on me. Can hear Shiloh howl like he's being torn in two, and my breath comes shorter and shorter, trying to get there in time. By the time I reach the pen, Dad's caught up with me, and he's got the flashlight turned toward the noise. The beam searches out the pine tree, the fencing, the lean-to, and then I see this big German shepherd, mean as nails, hunched over Shiloh there on the ground. The shepherd's got blood on his mouth and jaws, and as Dad takes another step forward, it leaps over the fence, same way it got in, and takes off through the woods. I unfasten the wire next to the pine tree, legs like rubber, hardly holding me up. I kneel down by Shiloh. He's got blood on his side, his ear, a big open gash on one leg, and he don't move. Not an inch. I bend over, my forehead against him, my hand on his head. He's dead. I know it. I'm screaming inside. Then I feel his body sort of shiver and his mouth's moving just a little, like he's trying to get his tongue out to lick my hand. And I'm bent over there in the beam of Dad's flashlight bawling. And I don't even care. Beside me, holding the flashlight up to Shiloh's eyes. Shiloh's still alive.
"This Jed Travers dog?"
I sit back on my heels and nod, wipe one arm across my face. Dad looks around.
"Take those gunny sacks over there and put them in the back of the Jeep," he says.
And then, still holding the flashlight in one hand, he slips his arms under Shiloh and picks him up. I can see Shiloh wince and pull back on his leg where it hurts. The tears are spilling out of my eyes, but Dad can't see him in the dark. He can probably tell I'm crying, though, because my nose is clogged. "Dad," I say, "please don't take him back to Judd. Judd'll take one look at Shiloh and shoot him."
"Take those gunny sacks to the Jeep, like I said,"
Dad tells me, and I follow behind as we go down the hill. I keep my mouth open to let the breath escape, crying without making a sound, just like Shiloh. Ma's watching from inside, the screen all covered with June bugs where they've been buzzing about the light. Daryl ends up, standing there in her nightshirt, watching. "What is it? What's he got?" Daryl Lynn says, pestering Ma's arm. "A dog," says Ma, and then she calls out, "Ray, is it alive?"
"Just barely," says Dad.
I put the gunny sacks in the Jeep, and Dad carefully lays Shiloh down. Without waiting to ask, I crawl in the Jeep beside Shiloh, and Dad don't say no. He goes in the house for his trousers and his keys. And then we're off. "I'm sorry, Shiloh," I whisper over and over, both hands on him, so he won't try to get up. The blood's just pouring from a rip in his ear. "I'm so sorry. Jesus, help me. I didn't know Baker's dog could leap that fence." When we get to the bottom of the lane, instead of going up the road toward Judd's place, Dad turns left toward Friendly, and halfway around the first curve, he pulls in Doc Murphy's driveway. Light's still on in a window, but I think old Doc was in bed, 'cause he come to the door in his pajamas.
"Ray Preston,"
he says when he sees Dad.
"I sure am sorry to bother you this hour of the night," Dad says, "but I got a dog here hurt bad, and if you could take a look at him, see if he can be saved, I'd be much obliged. We'll pay..."
"I'm no vet,"
says Doc Murphy. But he's already standing aside, holding the screen open with one hand so he can carry Shiloh in. The doc's a short man, round belly, don't seem to practice what he preaches about eating right. But he's got a kind heart, and he lays out some newspapers on his kitchen table. I'm shaking so hard I can see my own hands tremble as I keep one on Shiloh's head, the other on a front paw.
"He's sure bleeding good, I can tell you that,"
Doc Murphy says. He puts on a stethoscope and listens to Shiloh's heart. Then he takes his flashlight and shines it at the dog's eyes, holding each eye open with his finger and thumb. Finally, he looks at the big, ugly wound on Shiloh's hurt leg, torn open right to the bone, the bites around Shiloh's neck, and the ripped ear. I turn my head away and sniffle some more.
"I'll do what I can," Doc says. "The thing we got to worry about now is infection. That leg wound's gonna take 20, 30 stitches. What happened?
I figure Dad will answer for me, but he don't. Just turns to me.
Marty?
I swallow. Big old German Shepherd chewed him up. Doc Murphy goes over to the sink and washes his hands.
Baker's dog. Every time that Shepherd gets loose, there's trouble.
He comes back to the table and takes a big needle out of his bag, fills it full of something. Something to make Shiloh numb, maybe.
This your dog, son?
I shake my head.
No?
He looks at me, then at Dad. Dad still won't say nothing, makes me do the talking. While the doc leans over Shiloh and slowly inserts the needle in his side, I get up my nerve. It's Judd Travers, I tell him. I got to start practicing the truth sometime.
Judd Travers? This the dog he's missing? How come you brought it in?
I had him, I say. Doc Murphy sucks in his breath, then lets it out a little at a time.
Whew,
he says, and goes on about his work. Don't know how long we're there in Doc's kitchen. Dad standing over against the wall, arms folded. Me with my hands cupped over Shiloh's head while Doc Murphy washes the wounds, dresses them, and starts stitching the skin back up. Once or twice I feel Shiloh jerk like it hurts him. But when he lays too still, I don't know if it's because he's numb or if he's dying.
The next 24 hours we'll know if this dog's gonna live,
the doc says.
You check with me tomorrow evening, we'll have some idea then. I can keep him here for a day or two, Ray, then if he makes it, you can take him on home.
I put my face down near Shiloh's again, my mouth next to his ear. Live, Shiloh. Live, I whisper. Hardest thing in the world is to leave Shiloh there at Doc Murphy's. The way his eyes follow me over to the doorway, the way his muscles move, like he's trying to get up when he sees me leaving. Second hardest thing is to crawl in the Jeep with Dad afterward. There isn't a word passed between us till we get home. Once Dad turns the motor off, though, and I'm all set to get out, he says,
Marty, what else don't I know?
What? I ask.
You keeping Judd's dog up there on our hill? Got a place for him all built, never letting on? What else you keeping from me?
Nothing, Dad.
How do I know that's not another lie?
'Cause it's not.
You saying so don't make it true.
I know then what Ma meant. But it's not all so black and white as Dad makes it out to be, neither. And sometimes when I get mad, it clears my head. You would have thought more of me if I'd let that dog wander around till Judd found it again, kicked the daylights out of him, I ask. That what you want me to do, Dad?
I want you to do what's right.
What's right? For once in my 11 years, I think I have my dad stumped. Leastways, it seems to be 30, 40 seconds before he answers.
You gotta go by the law. The law says a man that pays money for a dog owns that dog. You don't agree with the law, then you work to change it.
What if there isn't time, Dad? Shiloh could be dead by the time somebody looked into the way Judd treats his dogs. Dad's voice is sharp.
You think Judd Travers is the only one around here hard-hearted toward his animals? You think he's the only one who starves them or kicks them or worse? Open up your eyes, Marty. Open your eyes!
Now Dad half turns in his seat, back resting against the door, facing me.
How many times have you walked to the school bus and seen a chained-up dog in somebody's yard? How many times you ever put your mind to whether or not it's happy, its ribs sticking out like handles on the sides? Suddenly you're face-to-face with a dog that pulls at your heart, and you all at once want to change things.
I swallow. There's got to be a first time, I answer. Dad sighs.
You're right about that, he says.
I'm pushing my luck, I know. If Doc Murphy don't tell Judd about Shiloh, can we bring him back here and keep him? I could build him a better pen, make the fence high enough so the Shepherd can't get in. Dad opens the Jeep door on his side.
No,
he says, and gets out. I get out, too. Just till Shiloh's better, then. You know how Judd treats anything that don't work right. He'll shoot Shiloh, Dad. I found a dog once before over near Judd's place with a bullet hole in his head. We could at least get Shiloh well. I'm going to pay Doc Murphy's bill. I promise you that. You get all my canned money for the next 3 years, and I'll deliver the county paper, too, if I get the chance. Honest. I promise. Dad studies me.
You can keep him here till he's well. That's all. Then we're taking him back to Judd.
And he goes in the house. My heart starts pounding again. Thumpity-thump, thumpity-thump. There's still time, I'm thinking. Shiloh's still alive. And I ain't licked yet. It's only after I lie back down on the couch that night that I realize what all I've done. To Ma and Dad, for one thing. Ma's still awake. I can see the light in the bedroom as Dad goes on down the hall. And then I hear their voices. Not all of what they say, but enough. Ray, told you I just found out about that dog myself.
Secrets from me, you and Marty.
Till tomorrow. I would have told you then.
Every day, the mail to Judd's place mentions that dog to me all the time. Up on my own property, me not even knowing.
I bring my arms up against my ears and hold them there. So many things going wrong, it's hard to remember anything going right. Doc Murphy knows I've got Judd's dog now. Dad's mad at Ma, and we won't know till tomorrow if Shiloh's even going to make it. Worst of all, I'd brought Shiloh here to keep him from being hurt, and what that German Shepherd done to him was probably worse than anything Judd Travers would have brought himself to do, short of shooting him anyways. This time, when the tears come again, I don't even fight. Don't even try holding back. I must have slept through Dad's going off to work the next morning, 'cause when I wake, Becky's standing beside the couch eating a piece of honey toast and breathing on my face. Daryl Lynn's already told her about the dog, because she asks right off, "Where's it at, the doggie?" I sit up and tell her the dog's at Doc Murphy's, and we'll find out how he is that afternoon. Then I look in the kitchen at Ma. There's the set look about the lips. It means trouble. That means don't mess with her, because she's already in trouble with Dad. I go outside, pick me a couple of wormy peaches, and sit on the stoop, eating at them. Spitting out the wormy places. Daryl Lynn comes out and sits beside me. Today she's all kindness. Judd Travers don't take care of his dog, Marty. No wonder it come up here, she says, trying to say the right thing. I can tell she's been figuring it all out from what she could overhear between Ma and Dad and anything else Ma told her. I take another bite of peach. It wasn't like you stole him, she says. That dog come up here on its own. Just hush up, Daryl Lynn. I say, which I had no business saying. I didn't want to talk to anyone, that's all. Well, you could have told me, and I wouldn't have told anyone. Thanks. Ma says we've got to give him back to Judd Travers when he's better.
I get up and start toward the hill to clean up the ground where Shiloh was attacked. See if there's any way I can put some fence wire over the top of the pen to keep out the shepherd.
What's his name, Marty? Daryl Lynn calls after me. Shiloh, I tell her.
I'm only halfway up the hill when I hear a car and turn around.
It's Mrs. Howard's car, and David's in it. Soon as he sees me, he jumps out, it's still moving a little, and comes running toward me.
I get to stay here today, he yells, waving a kite he's brought with him. Everyone else is going to Parkersburg, and I didn't want to go.
I look over to where Ma and Mrs. Howard are talking, see Ma nodding her head. I get lonely sometimes up at our house, but today I want to be with that loneliness. Don't want to talk to Daryl Lynn, to Becky, to Dad, or even to Ma. If we had a telephone, I'd be calling Doc Murphy every hour. As it is, I have to wait till Dad comes home from work before I can find out about Shiloh. Can't go down there pestering Doc, him with patience to see.
What do you want to do? I ask David, trying to dig up the least little bit of enthusiasm. David and I are in the same grade, even though he's taller and heavier and looks like junior high already.
Try out this kite over in your meadow, he says. I lead him around the long way, away from Shiloh's pen, and he doesn't even notice because he's unwrapping his kite made of silk or something, which one of his relatives brought him. We stand out in the meadow flying the kite, and I watch the blue and yellow and green tail whipping around in the breeze. And I'm thinking about Shiloh's tail, the way it wags. You get a dog on your mind, it seems to fill up the whole space. Everything you do reminds you of that dog. When we bring the kite down later, though,
David sees a groundhog, and next thing you know, he's after it. The groundhog zigzagging this way and that, David yelling like crazy. I'm taking your kite back down to the house, David, I yell when I see him getting near Shiloh's pen. He goes on running and yelling. I'm going to get me a handful of soda crackers. You want me to make some peanut butter cracker sandwiches? I call out, trying to get him to follow. And then his yelling stops.
Hey,
he says. I know he's found the pen, and I walk over. What's this? David asks. He looks at the blood on the ground. Hey, what happened here? I go over and yank his arm and make him sit down. He's looking at me bug-eyed.
You listen to me, David Howard, I say. Whenever I say David Howard, he knows it's serious.
Only did it twice in my life. Once when he sat on the paper flower pot I'd made for Ma at school, and once when he saw me with my pants down in the bathroom. That really made me mad. But today, I'm not mad.